When I pull up to the parking lot, it's time to level up. Dial in, showing out for your team. Listen up, get you some, I stand the fan to give you what you need. Fan fuel, game time, turn up the intensity. Team colors bleeding out, 5-hour energy. For a limited time, get the fan fuel flavor at 5hourenergy.com.
Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast. All right,
so the reality of the situation is this with the Texans. As angry as people are about the offense, I'm excited about the defense. There was a lot of good. When it's primetime games, you and I don't get to really sit back and kind of assess what happened, you know?
We're in on we get a couple hours of sleep and we're in. When you guys listen to us on Monday morning, it's probably nice in some ways because it's kind of like, it's almost like we just finished watching the game anyway. Yeah. So it's more of an immediate gut reaction without much time to reflect.
Especially with the night games. I mean, it's literally, I mean, for me, it's a 3-hour turnaround from the post-game
So I can tell after the bad games, though, you've been listening, you know, you do the post-game show, and you've had 3 hours of callers who are also angry.
Right.
Kind of really fanning the flames of
your emotion. Yeah, and some are good, and some are really bad. Sorry.
Yeah. Well, a lot of them are drunk,
And some of them are just bad. After sitting back, there's a lot to like about that Detroit game. Obviously, the second half offense was not one of those things. But the fact of the matter is this, the Texans are going to make the playoffs. They're going to win the AFC South. If things hold up, they're going to be in a very familiar spot. Now, hopefully they win some games here and maybe they're more than the 4 seed, but if things hold up the way they are, they'll be the 4 seed. They'll host a playoff game and then we'll see what happens. They have a 94% chance of making the postseason. So compared to where we were just 2 years ago, this is really good. You know, it was bad.
It is also this time last year, the Jaguars were about a 94% chance to make the playoffs.
That's a good point. Now, here's the thing, and I didn't even include this in my reasons I'm about to state here, but you're right. They were 6-4, the Texans, on a 3-game winning streak, and they were still, I think, 2 games back of the Jaguars. I think the Jaguars were like 8-2, the Jaguars were 7-3. And so they're still behind the Jags in the division. And then the very next week after they were 6-4, the Jags came here and beat the Texans. Eventually we know how it worked out. The Jags choked, the Texans win the division. So you can't, you're right, Seth. You can't count on anything being 100%. But the same exact record this year as we had last year. And yet I feel like the vibes are way different. And some of it may have to do with you're on a 3-game winning streak last year, and this year you're 6-4 and you've lost a couple in a row. But I think it's been this way all year. Like, even when the Texans were 5-1, there was a lot of hand-wringing going on about how they got to 5-1. You know, right. there were signs that what's happening now could happen. I think the biggest reason, I sat under a tree yesterday and said, why is this happening, Seth? Why are the people negative right now about a team that has the exact same record that they were celebrating and fetting last year?
Apple fell on your head?
What happened?
What wisdom was delivered unto you?
5 apples fell on my head, each representing a reason that the Texan fans are feeling. The biggest one is expectations, obviously. Like last year, there were no expectations, right? The expectation was improvement. That you'd start to see signs. Like, I think they could have been 4-6 at this time last year, and if C.J. Stroud was cooking and you saw the signs of the swarmy defense coming together, you'd be like, all right, this is what a rebuild looks like. They've already won more games than they won all of last year, and we're halfway through the season. They were 6-4. This year, I think the bar was set, to this point in the season, I think we can say maybe unrealistically high to this point in the season.
Oh, no. I think especially that Lions game. Now, if you looked at it in a vacuum, if all of a sudden you just deposited that Lions game down in last year's season, the Lions are who they are right now.
Oh, my God.
Then, we would have thought, my gosh, they slugged it out without Nico Collins, without Will Anderson.
Good point.
At what the defense did. Yeah. Yeah, the offense has some issues, but hey, he's a young quarterback, baby.
Right.
And certainly they'll swap out some of these offensive linemen in the offseason.
Certainly.
Right?
Yes.
Right?
Certainly.
Certainly. Certainly they'll do something to bolster their interior offensive line, certainly.
One would think.
Okay.
So that's number one. That's the obvious one. Number two, C.J. Stroud. And last year, especially at this time of year, C.J. was a total phenom, taking the league by storm. He was a couple weeks removed from throwing for 500 yards against the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. Last second comeback. And this year, he hasn't been bad, but there's been no sign of him taking the leap. You know, he was getting a lot of benefit of the doubt of being a top five quarterback coming into the season this year. And he hasn't been a top five quarterback this year. It's not all been Bobby Slowick and the offensive line's fault.
Right. And I think the parallel you can draw in some ways is if you look at Pat Mahomes this year, if you want to feel better about it, all right, man, you know what? Pat Mahomes hasn't been himself either. And there's nobody that's going to question whether or not he's a great quarterback or whether, okay, even the people that would question his greatness would still say, right, yeah, but he's still a really good quarterback, okay? I'm not putting him up in Peyton's era there, but yeah. Even those people would say this year is a little bit of an outlier.
Yeah, and I think CJ's going through some stuff here in year two. Number three, and we're going through reasons why the vibes on this year's 6-4 are different than last year's 6-4. I think some of it is like relationship stuff, you know, where like the first year in your relationship, like everything, like there's a honeymoon period, you know what I mean? Like any of the flaws get overlooked early on in a relationship.
Your partner's farts smell sweet. You're like, oh, isn't that cute? She farted.
That's
I didn't
a little
even
extreme.
Know she farted. Ah, it's cute.
But yeah, like she, yeah, she's
it
hot.
It always makes her prettier because now
hot.
I know she's not as perfect as I thought, but that's what makes life beautiful,
If that analogy helps you, then yes, that's what I'm talking about. So I think so now, you know, as we kind of talked about this in the open a little bit, like with D'Amico. Like, okay, we've got a year and a half body of work now. Like, okay, is he a little overly loyal to players who he shouldn't be? You know, like the Damian Pierce thing, the Kenyon Green thing, maybe coaches. I think the team's lack of a killer instinct is a big thing for me. Like that this team can't put other teams away when they've got them on the mat. Mm-hmm. Like these are things that are not – like it's funny ha-ha when it's happening early on in a rebuild. It's not as – you know, it's not as – it's more disturbing now, a year and a half in, that it's still happening.
It's disturbing, and it's, yes, the second half meltdowns. That's why the Sunday night game was so frustrating. It's because on the scoreboard, they slugged it out with the Lions, when in reality, no, it really was all about the Lions in the second half.
Yes.
The Lions, for the second straight week, and then the Jets last week, it was all about the Jets in the second half. Yeah. They just took it to you in the second half. And then you watch the Jets the next week go and get destroyed. Mm-hmm. And you realize, oh, yeah, they're genuinely not a good football team. So 2 weeks in a row, you've really been handled in the second half. And, yes, I give the defense a big break because they all gave – the first three quarters, they kept coming up with answers to what the
– turnovers.
For the Texans' issues offensively.
Yeah.
CJ throws an interception, fine. We'll get an interception.
Yeah.
Oh, you want to do it again? Yeah, let's play this game.
Let's play this game. It's like a tennis match of turnovers. It was crazy. Reason number four, the vibes being different on this year's 6-4 than last year's 6-4, the offensive line. I'm not saying the offensive line was good last year. It wasn't. But last year, it was more like there were injuries on the offensive line. Way more like sort of potluck each week. Like remember all the different permutations of O-line they trotted out there? Like it was more of a unit where you're like, oh, these guys are they're going out there and they're doing the best with what they've got out there. You know? Like
Right.
And doing their best each week in a new system, too, by the way, that takes a year to learn, people say. So they're still in the first year and they're doing it with shuffling all sorts of guys around, like just triage situations on the interior, that kind of stuff. George Fant at right tackle. This season, they've been healthy all year. Like it's the same, other than Kenyon Green finally getting injured in week 9 or whatever. Like it's a largely healthy group that is in year two, quits on blocks, is letting CJ Stroud get killed, and they wear skinny jeans. At least a couple of them do, and they're not skinny.
Man, that Lions game was the biggest one yet, where you felt like, man, all right, this Lions defensive line are some blue collar. Hit you upside the head. I don't care. I'm a man. Like going versus a bunch of college boys.
Yes.
Like it felt like the Texans. It's like the Texans took a college all-star team and gave them a chance to play an NFL game.
Dude, that's what's so weird about this for me with the offensive line is you're exactly right. You look at guys on both sides of the ball on that Lions team. offense and defense, and especially in the trenches, you go, man, those are Dan Campbell guys right there. Those are Dan Campbell guys from beginning to end. They're Dan Campbell guys out there. And you look at the Texans, and on the defense, you go, those are D'Amico Ryan's guys out there. But D'Amico's not the defensive coordinator. He's the head coach. And I don't look at this offensive line and think for a minute that there's anything about this offensive line that is molded in the image of D'Amico Ryan's.
They stick out like a sore thumb.
Yes.
And how non-swarm like they are.
Yes.
Just like, I mean, nobody would be proud of this child. You know, like when you bring your offensive line to family dinner, you're like, oh, I hope they don't. Boy, they're gonna start in with their conspiracy theories, and it just, Thanksgiving's going to turn into a wreck because of the offensive line. They're going to be off. They're going to be like yelling at grandma about something she did in 1950. What an awful person she is. Grandma, you're a racist. You're a racist. So it's just going to be, it's going to be bad. You know, you can't bring this offensive line anywhere.
Yeah. Yeah. And you just can't wait for Thanksgiving to be over. And it shouldn't be that way.
Right. I'm sitting down there at my Sunday dinner, you know, with the Detroit Lions, and this is who we brought.
Right. Oh, I can't wait for this to be over. Oh, it's Laramie and Titus going to do that thing? Are they just going to start making...
Offensive line is hitting on their brother's wife. Like, just all this, just what? Completely.
Why is Titus making armpit fart noises at the
table? Yeah. Like, oh, great. The offensive line brought a whoopee cushion to the wake. We got a funeral to go to, and the offensive line is putting a whoopee cushion
to the
down.
Wake. Yeah. So that's number four. The last one for me, and this is just... injury frustration. You know, like last year, the Texans, no team in the NFL had worse injury luck than the Texans last year.
Mm-hmm.
And so this isn't anything where I'm upset with the team itself or the coaching staff or the front office or the players. This is just a general frustration with this season for me, is that they had a lot of bad injury luck last year, and I don't feel like their injury luck has been great this year either. You know, like, mm-hmm. I feel like they've been hit with good players. I don't know how many games they've lost to starters. Like, the only position group that stays healthy is the damn offensive line, and they're the worst group on the team. But losing Nico Collins has been huge for this team. The big acquisition you make in the offseason, you lose Stephon Diggs to an ACL for the season.
Yeah.
Now Will is out. Kamari Lassiter is out again with a concussion. Joe Mixon missed a few games there in the interim with an ankle. So, for me, I mean, I don't know number of game-wise if it's been as bad as it was last year. I mean, that offensive line last year was really banged up in 2023. But I feel like the injury gods have not been good to us this season.
The biggest thing where I come back to Bobby Slowick, mm-hmm. and how much is he doing to actually make things better is if you look at the Chiefs. So Pat Mahomes right now, 12 touchdowns, 9 interceptions, 2,200 yards passing. C.J. Stroud right now, 12 touchdowns, 6 interceptions, mm-hmm. 2,371 yards passing. Mm-hmm. They've got about an identical passer rating, all of that. And again, I'll give Pat Mahomes every excuse in the world because it's just there's more to it than just Pat Mahomes. But when you watch the Chiefs, when you watch the Lions, even when they're not doing well offensively, the screens are still effective. They still figure out ways to get the running backs involved. They can still run the ball. All of these things when the quarterback isn't playing well, where with the Texans, their screen game is so ineffectual and so predictable. And the run game is, as we've said, I think they've improved in a lot of regards, but they can't run when they really need to run the ball.
Right.
When that's what the game demands, it's that you don't, or when they get down into the red zone, they can't really run when they need to run. They can stack up some big runs in the middle of the field, like with Joe Mixon. They got the touchdown in the first half last week down in the red zone. Great, but not consistently enough. And it's that's where I got so excited when Joe Mixon caught that screen and took it to the house, or almost took it to the house in that game, because, oh, okay, here's evidence that Bobby Slowick knows how to engineer some of these and ambush people with it.
Yeah.
Instead of it being, oh, it's 3rd and 10, and they're in this formation, they're totally going to run a screen. And the defense, I'm so tired of watching opposing defenses basically standing there waiting for the screen receiver to catch the ball so they can make the tackle.
It's frustrating, man. All right, Payne and Pendergast with you on a Tuesday. We'll get to some headlines next. There are some Texans nuggets. No D'Amico Ryans yesterday. Everything was pushed back a day because they're playing on Monday instead of Sunday. So D'Amico will meet with the media today. So I'm sure you'll hear some of that on the drive with Sterner and Hughley in the afternoon. Monday Night Football last night. We got a little bit of Astros news. Rockets win as well. We'll get to all of that in headlines coming up next.